Welcome to Sunday Sermons and other recordings from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Davis, California. Please visit our website at www.uudavis.org for further information.
I'm Autumn Labbe-Renault. I am this morning's worship leader, and you are welcome here. It is wonderful to be together again. Our senior minister, Reverend Beth Banks, is on study leave until the end of the month, and well-deserved. And our campus and intern minister, Alex Hader-Winnett, is in the Bridge House today with the youth and children, and they're working on photo collages, and I kind of want to be over there a little bit, but I'm glad to be here.
Good morning. I'm Emily Burstein, and I'm the worship associate for today. And joining us as song leader is Pat Moore Pickett. And Pat's already done a wonderful job to get us awake and started. And Melanie Beats is our piano accompanist today. So thank you, Melanie.
As Unitarian Universalist, we believe all people have inherent worth and dignity. You are welcome here, no matter your identity or who you love. You're welcome here no matter what you look like, no matter your understanding of God or your answers to life's big questions. You are welcome into this community of curious learners and compassionate listeners.
So today, bearing in mind that humor is our topic, I've got a little extra to say. So, as we welcome you to our denomination, it's only fair to tell you what we are. We are friendly, and if you're not friendly, out you go. We believe in tolerance, and we can't stand intolerant people. We are more non-competitive than other groups. Freedom of belief is strictly enforced, and dogmatism is absolutely forbidden. We aren't sure how ambivalent we should be. We're optimists, and anyone who doesn't look on the bright side depresses me. We believe in equality. Everyone is as good as the next person and a whole lot better. Every Unitarian is a feminist, so he has to watch his language. Our organization is run democratically, and that's because the president insists on it. We are prompt about being late to meetings, and to our wonderful faith, we joyfully say welcome you. Today, I invite Liz Young to come down and light the chalice. Liz has been a member of the congregation for almost 40 years. She has been a leader and a helper in more ways than I bet even Liz can remember. She has a warm, nimble, and buoyant sense of humor, so we are very pleased she can light the chalice today. To acknowledge all that is being held by the people in this room, we light one pillar candle for the sorrows of the world, for the moments that weigh heavy on our hearts. We light one pillar candle for the joys of the world, for the moments of hope and celebration. Today, I will start the chalice lighting with a quote from Max Irons. Kindness and a generous spirit go a long way, and a sense of humor. It's like medicine. Very healing. We light our chalice this morning, grateful for the laughter that we experience in this beloved community. May the flame light our way. I'm going to read a humorous poem for the time of all ages portion of the service. It's written by Shel Silverstein, who's been a favorite children's author for many generations. And it's titled, What If? Last night, while I lay thinking there, some what-ifs crawled inside my ear and pranced and partied all night long and sang their same old What if song? What if I'm dumb in school? What if they've closed the swimming pool? What if I get beat up? What if there's poison in my cup? What if I start to cry? What if I get sick and die? What if I flunk that test? What if green hair grows on my chest? What if nobody likes me? What if a lightning bolt strikes me? What if I don't grow taller? What if my head starts getting smaller? What if the fish won't bite? What if the wind tears up my kite? What if they start a war? What if my parents get divorced? What if the bus is late? What if my teeth don't grow in straight? What if I tear my pants? And what if I never learn to dance? Everything seems swell, and then the nighttime what-ifs strike again. So this worship reflection, worship associate reflection, has thrown me for a loop. I was just starting to feel comfortable bearing my soul to all of you on serious topics. And now I need to incorporate humor. So please just bear with me as I try a change in style. I came from a New York Jewish family where humor was somewhat sarcastic and cerebral. My father wrote thank you notes to clients that went roughly like this. Thank you for the beautiful and large clock, but I wonder if you think I need it in order to be on time for meetings. Humor wasn't mean. It didn't aim to hurt others, but it did have a sharp edge, and it certainly wasn't sweet, silly, or sentimental. As a young adult, I often kidded about my self-perceived failings, as if my superior self-knowledge put me in a good position to poke fun at my own weaknesses, and by extension, the weaknesses of others. But over time, I came to see that this kind of humor was undermining my sense of self-worth, and I was not honestly recognizing its sharp undercurrent when it was directed at others. Having children certainly changed my relationship to humor. I remember looking at wonder at my first infant son on the changing table when he was just a few weeks old. He then interrupted my reverie by peeing right at my chest. That little guy taught me quickly how to enjoy the unexpected and find humor in silly and ridiculous situations. After that, I made sure to cover his privates with a diaper when I changed him. Now that I'm older, I use humor to appreciate different kinds of situations. Between my hearing loss and my teenager's mumblings, we often just don't understand what the other one has said. So we've developed kind of a comedy routine around these situations. The other day, we saw some students riding their bikes to UCD when we were driving in the car, and Avery remarked with sympathy, "It's summer. Why do they have classes?" I heard glasses instead of classes. So we proceeded to improvise kind of a comedy routine about the why students didn't need glasses in the summer. You get the idea. I mean, it's not all that funny in the retelling. It's not a good joke. It's just silly humor, mostly about riffing off of each other and feeling the pleasure and release of tension brought on by laughter. It's refreshing to have a new relationship to humor. I find it similar to the change in my relationship to anger and reactivity. I could get angry with myself or Avery that I mishear so often, and honestly, plenty of times I do. But instead, sometimes I'm able to take a breath and look for the humor. Not sarcastic humor to hide my frustration, but silly humor that transforms the frustration to laughter. I try to pay more attention to the moment so I can react with more presence. Humor helps me to recognize and take delight in the infinite number of things that can be funny. I'm not going to lose my New York sarcasm. or stop picking fun at my own failings. I'm quite attached to that part of myself. But I do try to pause and check if this humor is just an old reflex with a mean edge towards myself or towards others. So instead, what I try to do is I find myself much more interested in being aware of the moments that can be transformed into silliness and connection with others.
I have a prop. I feel obligated to point out it's energy efficient. The last church I attended before a 20-year hiatus from organized religion was Christ Episcopal Church in Ontario, California. I was 16 and torn between strangling boredom and absolute mirth every single Sunday. This small parish church held high mass each week, complete with incense, a service done mostly in Latin. It was incomprehensible to my 16-year-old self. My parents had bounced between Catholic and Episcopalian churches for as long as I could remember, always searching for that elusive something. They never found it. Most of the ministers were kindly older men who seemed remote, but the priest at this church, well, Father John was the funniest clergy person I'd ever met. For one, he loved to share stories about his housekeeping. So when you're having people over, you clean the bathroom and you put low-watt light bulbs in the rest of the house. No one will ever know. And then, in between the procession of the cloying incense and the sermon, he'd work in one-liners like, you know, we're the church started by a man who had six wives, so forgiveness is a given. And referencing Episcopalians' reputation to be just a little stuffy, he'd toss out lines like, let's not take ourselves too seriously, people. You know what they say, Episcopalians, God's frozen chosen. These were almost always delivered with an eye roll. The guy really had some flair for the dramatic. And while it wasn't enough to make me stay in church, it did leave me with a lasting impression that religion needn't be humorless, and that, in fact, the ability to laugh at oneself and one's faith is probably, at least occasionally, a healthy impulse. When Alex asked me to lead a service this summer, I chose the topic of humor and religion because, as I near the end of my time as a worship associate here, I wanted to do something a little bit lighter. I also wanted to learn more about the relationship between Unitarian Universalist and humor. So, things I've learned in the past few weeks. Religion and humor is a much heavier topic than you might think, and there's a mountain of scholarship on the relationship between the two. For purposes of time and space here, I'm kind of coming at this from a Western tradition, so bear with me. First, there's the humor itself. You've got the kind of sharp-edged, teasing humor Emily mentioned. And then satire, parody, irony, and jokes, of course. And playwrights, pundits, and stand-up comics have taken turns through the ages skewering religion. So what is it about the topic that makes it so easy to mock? And conversely, what does it say about our overall comfort level with a faith if we are afraid to poke fun at it? All the Unitarian Universalist jokes I've come across are a little bit ambiguous. They poke fun at UUs as being very fair, very smart, and a little wishy-washy. Did you hear the one about how many Unitarian Universalists it takes to change a light bulb? We choose not to make a statement either in favor of or against the light bulb. However, if in your own journey you have found that light bulbs work for you, that is wonderful. You are invited to write a poem or compose a modern dance about your personal relationship with your light bulb. Present it next month at our annual Light Bulb Sunday service, in which we will explore a number of light bulb traditions, including incandescent, fluorescent, three-way, long life, and tinted, all of which are equally valid paths to luminescence. Sure, it's funny. I laugh too. But I was curious, and it wasn't the jokes urging me on, and nor was it all that scholarship. I kept coming across things that really positioned humor and religion as diametrically opposed forces. So my initial takeaway was religion is inherently not a laughing matter. Then I dug deeper. Because I'm a student of both history and popular culture, I wanted to understand this relationship between humor in both a historical context and then bring it forward to something that I'm very familiar with, which is television. What I wanted to know was what we learn about religions, ours and others, when we examine the humor about them. Is there a way in which humor can be instructive, a tool, if you will? And how do we use it in a way that doesn't denigrate others? First, I learned that philosophers through the ages have had an awful lot to say about the place of humor and religion. Plato, for one, wasn't fond of humor or even laughing, equating it with a lack of self-control. And a lot of early Christians thought laughter was contemptible. Weeping and wailing were good, humor not so much. But in the Middle Ages, wow, things really loosened up a bit. We had the concept of carnivals and the Feast of Fools. The gist of these being a belief that no one could be pious year-round, and even good folks needed to just let it all hang loose once in a while. In fact, through the ages, there seems to be a recurring theme that humor is low and coarse and something for the unwashed masses, and not for those who aspire to the loftier ideals that religion represents. Well, after that, skipping a lot of centuries, philosophers from Hobbes to Kierkegaard to Schopenhauer all had something to say about it, humor, most of it utterly humorous as dictated from their ivory tower. And from the mid-century, 20th century on, ideas about religion and humor evolved as quickly as the technology that brought information and news into our houses. So let me talk about TV for a bit. In popular culture and in relation to religion, humor is most often centered on Judeo-Christian concepts and frequently garbed as satire and parody. This really plays out on TV. Shows ranging from Saturday Night Live to South Park to The Simpsons have alternately eviscerated religion and perhaps unwittingly elevated it. I did not know this. The Simpsons was even praised by the Vatican, in 2009 for being a beneficial influence. Current TV series such as The Good Place and God Friended Me pose questions ranging from religious to ethical, often finding humor in the fact that people are pretty confused most of the time, but basically trying to do the right thing. In The Good Place, any of you familiar with this show? Okay. The series focuses on Eleanor, who wakes up in the afterlife and is introduced by Michael to The Good Place, which is a highly selective, heaven-like utopia that he basically designed as a reward for her very righteous life. However, she quickly realizes she was sent there by mistake. She's in fact not righteous, and she must hide her morally imperfect behavior and try to become a better and more ethical person. The Good Place is funny because we recognize it's striving for a kind of perfection we believe we can never achieve in our own lives. It lets us laugh at our own shortcomings gently. The plot of God Friended Me comes somewhat closer to a UU point of view. Protagonist Miles is the son of a priest, and he now runs a podcast called The Millennial Prophet, which is about his atheism. He receives a Facebook friend request from God. Although he suspects it is a hoax, he nevertheless accepts the friend request and then begins to accept other friends suggested by God. The first suggested friend, he ends up saving the man's life when he tries to commit suicide by jumping in front of a subway train. And each episode continues in the same vein. God makes a suggestion, Miles follows through, and some kind of salvation is accomplished. I like the show for its contemporary twist, and also for the way it allows Miles to question his faith even as he's living it out. There are many TV shows that have taken on religion. And they typically create the same kind of tension. If you're religious, you have to work really hard to be perceived as good, and you should be lacking in levity. And if you're poking fun at religion, are you actually capable of being religious? Let's look again at our own faith through that lens. How does the humor about Unitarian Universalism function to critique or bolster our faith? What makes religion funny? Who laughs and who doesn't? Here are a couple more jokes about UUs. A UU is told, "I hear you deny the divinity of Christ." "That's not true," said the UU. "We don't deny the divinity of anyone." And Unitarian Universalist prayers. "Dear God, if there is a God, please save my soul, if I have a soul, and to whom it may concern." This kind of humor relies on an easy punchline, and apparently UUs fit the bill because people think there's not a lot of there. So my question to you, is this how we want to be known? We know our denomination is a minority among organized religion. We know that our lack of absolutes and our commitment to meeting each and every person exactly where they are can be unsettling for others. And because humor is often predicated on the common experiences of a culture, perhaps we should pay attention to how humor bolsters positions of the dominant in every joke told and every chuckling response. Much like Father John taught me that a sense of humor about one's religion was not only healthy, but rather endearing, I think UUs have a choice to make. From the minority position, be laughed at or claim that humor as our own and brand it with all the intelligence, sympathy, and joy that are at the heart of our faith. I, for one, don't want us to be known as a religion that lacks substance, but as a vigorous faith that is open and accommodating to all the beautiful permutations that make us human. That's our strength. I found something I liked on the website of UU Fellowship of Fairbanks, Alaska. Their welcoming statement: a place where people of reason, humor, and compassion come together to explore religion without dogma or guilt and to work for a world based on peace and justice. Their website also features quotes from its congregants, and a Mr. Ed Shamp wrote, "Unitarian Universalism is cooperation with the universe that created us. It is a celebration of life. It is being in love with goodness and justice. It is a sense of humor about absolutes." And to that I say, amen. You are invited to enter into a time of meditation and prayer. Spirit of life, we pause to give thanks for the many gifts of life that are ours, gifts we find expressed and enhanced in the community of this church. We are grateful for our family and friends and all they mean to us. We are grateful for the insights and beauty we find around us in the natural world. We give thanks for our understanding of the sacred. For each of us, we speak the deepest prayers of our hearts in different ways, knowing that what it means to be answered will look and feel different for each of us. In this time of upheaval, we are grateful for the smiles from our fellow congregants, for laughs shared and workloads lightened. We give thanks for the role humor and perspective play in our lives. Even in the darkest times, we have much if we have some levity and joy. We know that some among us are struggling, carrying burdens that are difficult. May we hold in our hearts gratitude for those things that bless us with their presence, forgiveness for all the ways we've turned from those blessings, and the willingness to open ourselves anew to this beautiful and hurting world. Amen, and blessed be.
We extinguish our two pillar candles, knowing that our joys are increased and our sorrows lessened by sharing our lives with each other. We extinguish our chalice, but not the warmth of our community, the light of truth, or the beauty of justice. May we carry it in our hearts until we return.
Friends, please join hands or touch shoulders around the room. It has been good to be together, and we leave you with this poem from Mary Oliver.
Every day I see or hear something that more or less kills me with delight, that leaves me like a needle in the haystack of light.
It was what I was born for, to look, to listen, to lose myself inside the soft world, to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclamation. Go now in peace, and let this congregation say amen.
Amen.